You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits or join the Facebook discussion groups www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I'm actually not that pumped for, I'm a Rays fan. I don't really care for Baltimore in general. And
we are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
David Dahl, Jose Bautista, and Jackie Bradley Jr.
Yes. And yes, even on Jackie Bradley Jr., which makes me kind of throw up in my mouth a bit.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I'm sorry. Will Myers stole 28 bases last year.
Oh, what?
That happened. I didn't even realize that. Honestly, I really didn't. I thought that I was more like 18, 19.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Mike Werner. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. And with me today is my main man, Mr. Evan Peterson. What's up, man?
Not a whole lot. How are you doing? Ready to chat about the Charm City here, Baltimore, baby?
Yes. Definitely not. I'm actually not that pumped for, I'm a Rays fan. I don't really care for Baltimore in general. And, you know, going through this team, it's a little bit different than last season, at least to this point. So we'll definitely dive into this and, you know, see what players can kind of help us out for this upcoming fantasy season. Before we do that, once again, you can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Where can you reach yourself, Mr. Evan?
At EasyEv3, hit me up.
Yes. Hit us up with any questions and such. Please rate and review the show on iTunes or Stitcher, SoundCloud, any of those podcast aggregators. It really helps us out. It really helps us, you know, get noticed. Once again, we do this for free. So if you can just take like a minute out of your day to help us out, that would be great. And we're just going to kind of continue with our team previews. You've already heard a multitude of them at this point, and we're just going to kind of keep it rolling. Like we already mentioned today, we are going to do the Baltimore Orioles. And when you talk about the Orioles, the first thing that kind of comes to mind is Manny Machado. So we'll get him out of the way first. He's a first rounder. Are you okay with that? Is there anything in his profile other than the fact that he, you know, essentially stopped stealing bases last year that has you worried in any way?
No, and that's the biggest thing is I don't know how far people were going to go in protecting him for 20 plus steals, but you would have to think double digits would have been something that you could have banked on at least in 2016. Early steamer projections have him down for 7. I think that's maybe a little high, considering he only attempted 3 steals last year. But everything other than that, as far as runs, RBI, home runs, there's not a whole lot to hate about it. And if you look at, we do have some early NFBC data. He was one of like 8 guys that had not gone outside the top 10 in any of their early drafts. So he's a fairly consistent guy going between 7 and 9. How high would you feel comfortable taking him, Mike?
Yeah, I'm kind of split on Machado because I like the elite tier of third baseman up top, you know, including Donaldson and, you know, my favorite being Nolan Arenado. I'm okay with taking him in the first round, but if I'm at the back end, you know, it would come down to me if I had the, you know, anywhere between 7 and 9. If I had the 7 to 9 pick, I would probably go Goldschmidt. But if Harper or Goldschmidt were not available, then I probably would go Machado. So he'll probably be like my 9th ranked player. based on kind of me just, you know, talking it out right now. But I have no problem taking him in the first round. I would prefer that he steal a few bases, and that's kind of my worry. I don't know how you can comfortably project him for 7 stolen bases based on what he had, based on the opportunity last year. His, you know, pretty much 2014 and 2016 were almost identical in terms of his opportunities. His speed score isn't that, you know, different from 2015 when he stole 20 bases. I just feel like Baltimore is going to use him as more of a run producing asset in the lineup as opposed to somebody that gets on base and steals. With that said, they don't have any speed on their lineup. You know, when we're just kind of, we're going to go through this, but you know, when you kind of look at this roster up and down, they only have one guy that really has the potential to steal 15 or more bases, and that's, you know, Joey Ricard. So in a nutshell, yes, I am comfortable taking him in the first round. I think that he is a safe bet to hit for 30-plus home runs, and he's part of that elite tier of third baseman. But again, you can wait and get a guy like Donaldson after that, maybe even get him at the turn at 12-13 if you're in a 12-team league, or you can wait a little bit later as well and, you know, get another, you know, third base option. But, you know, in general, I think that he's a fine first-round pick. I think he's safe as well, which is what you're really looking for.
Yeah, just one thing, you were talking about the opportunities. Last season, he cranked 40 doubles compared to 30 in 2015. So, you know, little more difficult going second to third as opposed to first to second. So you think if that number rolls back, more opportunities. But I like what you said about, you know, 7 steals being a little optimistic there.
Yeah, and it's not even that. I mean, would I be surprised if he stole 7 bases? Absolutely not. Like, he's fast enough to do so. And, you know, my argument that this team doesn't have a lot of speed on the roster could go against me as well. I mean, they might need to use him to steal some bases since they don't have any speed. And, you know, if you have a lack of speed, then maybe you want to kind of gain some with somebody, with one of your more, you know, young and athletic talents. That's Manny Machado. But just for me, like, I want to go by the most recent data, and that's him just literally not getting opportunities to do so. But, you know, just looking at his batting profile, this is a 100% A-grade guy. He is going to hit for 30-plus home runs. I have no problem with that. Baltimore's home ballpark is, you know, borderline. In my opinion, it's the best in the American League. It's probably, you know, top 3 in terms of overall parks in all of baseball to hit in. So there's everything to like there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to the outfield real fast. I just wanted to get him out of the way. So, you know, let's go with Adam Jones, Hyun-Soo Kim, and Joey Ricard is who is penciled in the outfield to, you know, at least as of right now, according to Roster Resource. You know, let's talk about Adam Jones a bit. You know, somebody that, you know, going into last year was, you know, a mid-round pick, going a little bit later than we were used to seeing him, and ended up having an okay season, nothing, you know, extraordinary. But what are we looking at for him going into this year? Is he somebody that is on your radar, or are you kind of, you know, looking at the aging curve and, you know, possibly looking on more negatively moving forward?
I mean, if you're looking around, kind of pick 75 is where I've seen him go in some of the early mocks, just to kind of throw a random number out there. I think that's about right. I still think he's a top 100 player. It's one of those things I actually noticed, and I'm going to play a quick game with you after I give some stats here based off of our mock draft. But when you look at Jones, if you want him to hit 30 home runs, he's got to hit more fly balls. And if he hits more fly balls, you're going to see the low BABIPs. It's just how the dominoes fall. It's how the stats all interwork together. And I've actually, one of the things I've been looking at as I've been doing research on a lot of these guys is their luck with a, home runs, with runners on base, bases empty or whatnot. He hit mid 80s as far as RBI, but 21 of his 29 home runs were solo shots. Though, you know, you got to take into account that he did get moved up to the leadoff spot at the end of May. And, That leadoff spot move really helped him out because he was batting 240 those first 2 months and then ticked up to 280 the rest of the season. But real quick, so Adam Jones went pick 82 in our recent mock draft at the end of the 7th round. And then he started a run where 10 of the next 20 picks were outfielders. And just real quick, I want to see it, you know, how many of these guys you would feel comfortable taking ahead of Jones. So real quick, Billy Hamilton or Adam Jones?
Billy Hamilton.
Lorenzo Cain.
Lorenzo Cain.
Schwarber.
Yeah, I would take Schwarber.
Kemp.
No, I would take Adam Jones.
Yeah. K'Ris Davis.
K'Ris Davis.
Justin Upton.
Justin Upton.
David Dahl, Jose Bautista, and Jackie Bradley Jr.
Yes, yes, and I yes, even on Jackie Bradley Jr., which makes me kind of throw up in my mouth a bit.
I mean, but he went ahead of all of those guys, and so you could see where he might come at a bargain if the valuations are a little bit differently come draft day for you. I'm interested to hear what you have to say on him.
Early drafts in NFBC have him going much later than the Friends with Fantasy Benefits drafted. 123rd overall is currently where he's at. His maximum pick was 145, and I don't really disagree with that much. Just the bottom line here, especially in 5x5 formats, I mean, he's even worse in OBP, but if you're looking at him just strictly in 5x5, he doesn't steal bases. The power isn't tailing off, but it's not a difference-making thing for him anymore. 30 home runs just isn't what it used to be, and you can grab guys like that later in the draft. Yes, he still is going to be in a pretty solid lineup, again, in a really good home ballpark, hitting in front of a few, you know, boppers here, but I just, you know, for me, you know, the second half last season was okay, not astonishingly awesome or anything like that. But it, like, the thing that I really kind of look at the most with somebody like Adam Jones is his 1 month. He had an amazing June last year where he hit 11 home runs. He had 30 of his runs scored that month. He hit 314 that month as well and almost 30 RBIs. You take that month out, which you can't do, but if you take that month out, you have a much more mediocre player. You have somebody that, you know, really was almost not unusable, but was somebody that was below average on your team for 5 of the 6 months of the season. And that's something that I can see continuing with Jones moving forward. He's only 31, so, you know, it's not like his career's over or anything like that, but the fly balls, he actually hit more fly balls last season, and you know, but his home run to fly ball rate was the lowest it's been, you know, since 2010. So that's, it's, you know, for me, it's kind of like he needs to continue that fly ball trend, which we don't necessarily, I won't necessarily bank on. I can see that fly ball trend going down a bit back to his, you know, career norm of 35%. And if he does that, kind of like you mentioned earlier, then you're looking at more of a 25 home run guy, which eats into his value a little bit more as well. I think the 123 tag is okay. But, you know, if you look at NFBC, at least right now, Lorenzo Cain's behind him. Like we already mentioned, I would take. How do you feel about Lorenzo Cain over him?
I was low on Lorenzo Cain last year. It's tough. I would probably go Adam Jones personally, but it's nothing I'm going to lose sleep over.
Yeah, and you know, just a couple names like Yasmani Tomas is going later than him. We could easily see him put up the same numbers as Adam Jones. Adam Duvall criminally is at 144. I would take him above Adam Jones in terms of their draft prices. Marcelo Zuna as well, you know.
I was just going to say, if you look at the floor dropping out on Duvall and Tomas, I believe was the name that you mentioned before that. I mean, I think Jones is a little more of a safer play than that, but I think you're right that there's probably a little more ceiling, at least as far as Tomas is concerned. I'm not a big Adam Duvall guy personally. Kind of screwed me last year, but I think Jones is just a little bit safer, even though if that means he's a little bit older, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and the last thing I'll kind of talk about with Adam Jones is, you know, Baseball HQ uses a metric called expected batting average based on, you know, a number of different metrics, but his expected batting average last year was 248, which is not a career low, but it's the lowest he's had since 2008. And his BABIP was also, you know, a career low, 280. The year before that, it was 290. So we're seeing a trend where, you know, hitters create their own BABIPs, and the last 2 years, the BABIP's been low. We're seeing the expected batting average just dive, you know, for him as well. And if we can't bank on batting average for him, you know, at least over the 270 mark, then that's also a problem for him, because obviously in OBP leagues, you can't count on a guy that, you know, has had, you know, essentially 6% or less in walk rate for, you know, pretty much his whole career at this point. And if he's going to only hit 260 or so, maybe even less, then that's a problem as well. I'm not up on Fangraphs right now, but I'm assuming he's somebody that if you just watch him swings outside, he swings at everything. He swings outside the zone at everything. He just chases. So I'd be interested to see what his, you know, outside the zone swing percentage is. But regardless, I can see that continuing at a high level and also kind of digging into his batting average too.
Yeah, so I actually have those numbers available for you. The past two seasons have been well above his 41.2% career average at 44.8 in 2016 and 46.5 in 2015. You were talking about the BABIPs. Like I said, last year I think it was the fly balls. The year before that I think it was a lack of hard contact. And, you know, if you need both of those variables to play for him to be a good play, it can be risky, but I think it could still work out in your favor.
Yeah, the one thing going for him is the fact that he's logged more than 500 at-bats in every season since 2010. So the reliability is strong. The problem is that, you know, when you're looking at mid-round picks, you're looking at upside, and the upside just isn't there for him. So if you are somebody that took a lot of gambles early in the draft, then I don't mind going with somebody like Adam Jones if you're just looking for a consistent play. But I do think he's on the downturn of his career. Again, not saying he's going to completely fall off, but I feel like there's a few more outfield options that you can roll with a little bit later in drafts, and you'll probably feel a little better about the possible upside. Let's move on to Hyunsoo Kim, who last year before the season started, I know us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits were really high on, in terms of being like an AL only play, we weren't like high on him as in like a top 100 pick, but like all of a sudden they just kind of ousted him at the beginning of the season. They didn't know what to do with him because they didn't want to send him, or he did not want to go to AAA. Then he finally gets kind of an opportunity to play a bit as the season goes on, mainly in June, July, and August, and did fairly well, especially for batting average. Wasn't a powerhouse asset or anything like that, but somebody that, you know, was at least at play in AL only leagues. I'm interested to hear what you have to say about Hyunsoo Kim this year, projected to be their second hitter in the lineup, and, you know, hitting in front of Manny Machado, it's got to be okay.
Well, yeah, part of that's got to do with the walk rate, which was over 10% last year. And I find it weird that as of this recording, Roster Resource has both Ricard and Kim in the starting lineup, because I've seen where they could look to platoon these guys. Lefty-righty splits kind of play really well with each other. So, you know, we were talking pre-show about, you know, as this team is kind of a whole lot of meh, like there's moves to be made, and, you know, something could happen between now and the time we release it that, you know, kind of blows all this out of the water. But Kim, I think a lot of people will be scared off by the shenanigans that happened at the beginning of last year. Not anybody I'm going to, you know, pin my hopes and dreams on or anything like that. But if that 345 BABIP is anything close to real, based on, you know, he doesn't have a fantastic hard hit percentage, but he's solid. He doesn't strike out a whole lot. If that's anything close to real, you could still be looking at a really solid hitter in the later portion of your draft.
Yeah, I mean, his draft cost is nothing. He's going, you know, 440.
Yeah, I'm talking dead end, you know.
Yeah, he's nothing.
And I'm trying to look at guys that have, you know, Seth Smith has been taken higher than him in NFBC drafts, John Jay, you know, such, you know, crushers like that. So keep that in mind.
Yeah. Well, in, you know, especially in deeper formats, you can use players like him, you know, especially in daily moves, whenever you're able to kind of move your roster around daily. Against righties, he was great, you know, and he pretty much only played against righties last year. He only logged 18 at bats against lefties, but, you know, 321 batting average, you know, six home runs, 287 at bats. Sure, that's, you know, not the most amazing home run to fly ball rate or anything, but you like the possibility for runs scored. You surely like, you know, the fact that he's hitting the ball pretty well against righties. And, you know, you like the walk rate, which you can certainly use in OBP format. So nice little player, doesn't have the profile to be a power hitter at all. So I could see those, you know, 10 home runs maybe in like a full 500 at-bat season, but likely we won't see a full complement of at-bats, which means, you know, five home runs is probably more where he's going to sit. And, you know, mainly batting average asset. He had a 53% ground ball rate last year, so that's certainly not something that's going to, you know, lend to more home runs at all. You know, speaking on the other end of the possible platoon here, Joey Ricard, somebody that, you know, he was somebody that the Rays had let go of and it was taken in the Rule 5 draft, I believe, by the Orioles, or he was just grabbed by them. Either way, played a decent little role for the Orioles last year. Wasn't anything amazing. Was okay at times for AL-only leagues, but did hit 300 in the second half last season in only 26 at-bats. But overall, just okay. You know, he had 5 home runs. He hit leadoff for them sometimes. Did steal a few bases, but has more speed than that available. What do you think of somebody like Ricard? I mean, I'm thinking he's just kind of a low-end AL-only play if the roster stays as it is right now.
Yeah, that I would pretty much just be parroting everything you just said, and especially as far as the steals, there may be a little more than he let on last year, but I don't think you're looking at 15 to 20 or anything crazy like that.
Yeah, I mean, the platoon thing would be a good idea for them just because, I mean, he hit 313 against lefties and he is a right-handed hitter, just for those that don't know. And he's only 26. So, I mean, you could certainly, let him be, part of that platoon with Hyunsoo Kim and they would have a pretty good situation there. But, we are recording this fairly early compared to where it's going to be coming out. So there could very well be a move made, post us recording this. And, maybe before that, we would kind of add a little excerpt in there to, make sure everything's correct. But as of right now, I think that they would probably have them as a platoon and they would probably grab another guy in free agency to make sure that this is like kind of a little bit better than what it's seeming, at least on the surface right now. Let's move on to the infield a bit for this team. We already talked about Manny Machado at third base. Before we talk about Chris Davis, I want to talk about Jonathan Scope because he was one of my favorite players going into last year. And, he's certainly not somebody that you love for on base percentage leagues, but the power is certainly legit. He's still going insanely cheap, though. Still available in the Friends with Fantasy Benefits mock draft that we're doing. And we're at pick, pretty much 160 at this point. His NFBC data has him at 180 right now, a max pick at 232. I just don't know why people don't like this guy more. I mean, he shows supreme power, playing again in an amazing ballpark, pretty decent lineup around him. What are we missing with somebody like Scope other than the fact that he strikes out?
I mean, I don't think we're missing a whole lot in Scope, and little spoiler alert, I'm next up in the draft, and if he's there, I'm probably going to end up grabbing him because I need middle infield help. But yeah, he was a big sleeper. He was pretty pumped up last year, and 25 bombs, solid production, but you look at the hard hit rate and it was only 26.6%. So, I mean, if that goes up a little bit, you could start to see some crazy things. And if people think that is going to go up, then the draft price might skyrocket here. The home run to fly ball rate wasn't anything crazy. It was 14.9%, which you might think when you look at 25 home runs versus that hard hit rate. And it's not just Camden that's helping him, as he's, the home road power splits are fairly even. And I mean, it just depends on how much helium he's going to get. But I think there's a lot to like here as far as power from the middle infield.
Yeah, I like him a lot. And, you cited the hard contact rate. It was actually, terrible last year. I mean, it wasn't like, league worst terrible, but it was bad compared to what he did in 2015. It was, certainly something that he needs to improve upon. Again, kind of looking at that expected batting average metric from Baseball HQ, he was right on par with that. He batted 267 last season. The expected batting average was at 266. He does hit a few more ground balls than you would expect from somebody that's going to hit 20 plus home runs, but I do love at the second base and middle infield position a guy that can certainly do certainly hit 20 plus home runs. I can see him hitting 30 or more if things kind of broke right for him. Doesn't strike out crazy amount. He does have that propensity to do that, but regardless, I love the profile. No, he's not going to walk, so again, in OBP formats, that's where I would kind of dip him a bit. But this is a guy that's 13%, 17%, 15% home run to fly ball rates in 3 years that he's been in the league. Only 25 years old, has a lot going for him. Really nice body on him too, not like in a sexual sense, I'm more meaning like in a just a physicality sense, like really nice athlete, and somebody that I can see easily, hitting 25 to 30 home runs easily. So I really like Scope. I think that he continues to be a value pick in any drafts, especially 5x5. Chris Davis is who I really want to get to here because it's been kind of back and forth with him, right? Like 2013, 50 home runs, 286 batting average, which will never happen again, by the way. No, never again will he hit 286. But 50 home runs in 2013. All of a sudden, 2014 drops back down to 26 home runs, $7 in roto dollar value, and 196 batting average. Then in 2015, contract year, 47 home runs, 262 batting average, $26 in roto value. And then last year, he hit 38 home runs, which was great. The problem was power was up around the whole entire league. The 221 batting average killed you, and that ended up with him having $12 in roto value. Certainly much worse than he was drafted for. I mean, I think he was going in the borderline, what, second, third round last year. Going into this year, I'm certainly interested in what you think of Chris Davis. Right now, he is the number nine first baseman being taken in NFBC drafts. Again, that's 5x5 format, 74th pick overall, min pick at 44, max pick at 101 right now. Chris Davis, man, what's up?
I mean, I'm a power whore, so I love the discount I'm going to be getting, and I'll just kind of figure out the batting average later. The Orioles finished top half of Major League in runs scored last year, but just 84 RBI for Davis, and that also hurt his value, not to mention the ratio stuff that you were talking about. And he needs to get back to pulling the ball a little bit more. I think that's going to be his ticket to getting over the 40 home run mark again in 2017. It's kind of hard to argue with the names that are going in front of him. When you look at NFBC, when you start looking at the counting stats that might be accumulated there and the ratios that aren't going to tank you. But you look at just a couple of the guys around him. Do you like Chris Davis or Jose Abreu?
Chris Davis.
Yeah. I know people are kind of down on Abreu this year. What about Will Myers?
Based on where they're going, Chris Davis.
Yeah, I think didn't Myers steal like close to 20 bases last year too, or something like that? I think that's got a little bit to do with his value.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's not going to happen again.
No. But you know, that's what people are factoring into their decisions early in the draft, and I don't think he's going to flirt with, Votto, Freeman, territory or anything like that. But
no.
I mean, as far as a power source, he could, hit more home runs than Freddie Freeman and Joey Votto and, definitely Jose Abreu, but it's the ratios that kill you.
I'm sorry. Will Myers stole 28 bases last year.
Oh, what?
That happened. I didn't even realize that. Honestly, I really didn't. I thought that I was more like 18, 19.
Honestly where I was at when I said I thought it was about 20. So my bad.
No, I'm. I didn't even think about that. So that's that. No wonder he's going in the top 50 picks. With Chris Davis, he was what the 20th first baseman according to the ESPN Player Rater last year, number four the year prior. So we know. We already know the power's there. There's nothing, to really argue about that. I do have a problem with the fact that he struck out 40% of the time in the second half last year. From July on, 40%, that's a problem. The BABIP was terrible, and, this comes down to me whether he's going to be able to, at least gain a little bit of contact back. And if you look at the 2013 season, he had a 340 BABIP, which is a bit inflated, but he has a 320 career BABIP, not that bad. His expected batting average on HQ was 297 that year. He hit 286. He actually, underperformed a bit. When you look at 2015, he had a 271 expected batting average. 262 was his actual, batting average that season. Last year, 231 was the expected batting average. 221 was the actual average. So it has had times where he has underperformed what the expected average should be. So if he can kind of bump that back up to even 240 is acceptable, then the 35-plus home runs are kind of automatic. One thing that, nobody really talks about with Chris Davis is at the beginning of his career, he was, really injury-prone, and everybody was kind of worried that if he would even make the major leagues. I mean, he was a Texas Rangers prospect, and, everybody kind of loved him, and then all of a sudden he couldn't stay on the field. He gets, given to Baltimore, and then all of a sudden he has found consistency there, at least in terms of the at-bats. We've seen him have, accrue 500-plus at-bats in four of the last 5 years. That's great. So we at least know that we can bank on at bats, and he hasn't hit less than 26 home runs in any of the last 5 years either. year. I'm okay with Chris Davis this year, and I think that he's well worth taking in the top 75. I wish it was a little bit more depressed. I wished it was like, you know, in the top 90 or so. But I'm okay with taking him there, especially if I miss out on one of the top guys. You know, one of the top five, like we were talking about the other night, or top six, I guess, when you add in Freeman. So I'm okay with him there. Is there anything else you want to add with Chris Davis? I mean, this is kind of a really interesting case.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be something that the market is going to be set by a lot of what you see in early mock drafts. So just be willing to, you know, let the market come to you here, because you are going to get him at a discount this year, I think, especially with how top-loaded first baseman is.
Yeah, and as far as, you know, the last thing I'll kind of add here is, with on-base percentage leagues, it's a big bump to him. He has gotten 13% walk rates in each of the last 2 years. And when you look at his batting eye, his strikeout to walk ratio, it actually has gotten better over the last couple of years as well. He's had a, you know, 0.4 strikeout to walk ratio in each of the last two seasons after having, you know, a career average of 0.31. So we're seeing some gains in terms of his plate control. We're just seeing kind of inconsistency. I mean, if you're looking at it kind of like the San Francisco Giants, like their even year magic, this is kind of supposed to be like the quote unquote even year magic for Chris Davis, except for it's not.
Yeah. Steamer has him at a 230 batting average. Do you go over or under?
I'm going to go over.
Okay. I think that's pretty much right on the money, but I would say probably no more than 235, but yeah, it's right there.
Yeah, you're not buying him for average. You're buying him for 45 plus homers. That's what you're buying him for.
Absolutely.
And yeah, he's only 31, so.
I was going to say, do the words Adam Dunn mean anything to you? Like, that's...
Exactly.
This is what you
he's very much like, I mean, Joey Gallo is hoping to be that type of guy too.
Absolutely. I mean, you can make a living doing it.
Exactly. Let's see. JJ Hardy, any interest?
No, pass.
Yeah, we don't really need to talk about him. He's going to be kind of a lineup filler. If you decide that you're just going to completely punt the position in AL only, then, you know, maybe you can kind of check him out. But, you know, the power days are over, and staying on the field is kind of becoming a little bit of an issue for him too. You know, Wellington Castillo, we'll talk about him. Trey Mancini is right now penciled in as their DH. You and I both kind of looked at it, and there's no scenario in my mind where they open the season with Mancini as their as a starting player for them. So I'm just going to kind of pass by him. If he does start, he is a, you know, high level prospect, has power in his bat, somebody that can certainly hit 20 plus bombs if given the opportunity in Camden Yards. I just don't think he'll be given a full season of opportunity. I think he's more of a second half play. So do you have any like disagreement there with Mancini?
No, you left out the part where we laughed at him too, but yeah. I mean, I guess that's to save his feelings.
Yeah, we laughed. There's no way I see that happening. I just don't.
No.
Wellington Castillo, somebody that people loved going into last season based on what he did in the second half with Arizona in 2015. Last year was okay. I mean, we saw him do, you know, well at times, but for the most part, you know, he ended up as a top 10 catcher, but didn't really wow us. I think we all expected him to be a little bit better than he showed. You know, the fact that he only hit, 14 home runs last season was a little bit less than we thought. And, you know, we saw kind of what Chris Hermann come up, you know, a little bit for Arizona, which was kind of disappointing. It kind of gave a platoon partner for Wellington Castillo that we didn't know was going to be there prior to the season starting. Regardless, he ended up having, you know, pretty decent batting average, an okay overall season, but goes to, you know, Baltimore this offseason and should hit towards the middle of that lineup. How are you feeling about him going into this year?
I mean, it's interesting. NFBC has him going as the 11th catcher off the board right now, which I think is kind of borderline territory, and it might make him a good punt candidate, especially if he could find some at-bats kind of in that DH role when he's not behind the plate or anything like that. I don't know that the BABIP is going to be sustainable at 337, which kind of floated his 264 average. So I think if you're looking there, you might be kind of fooled. But, I mean, going from Chase Field to Camden, the lineup, do you consider that a plus or a minus as far as going from Arizona, or is it pretty lateral for you?
It's kind of lateral because, you know, Arizona is actually really good for batting average. It gives, you know, an upgrade there. But obviously Camden Yards adds a ton in terms of power. So it's kind of lateral there. I think he could certainly hit for more home runs than, you know, the 14. I think we could definitely see him hit for more than 20. But at the same time, I can see the batting average going down as well. You know, it just kind of depends on what you're looking for when you're drafting that type of guy. Last year on the road, he hit, you know, 6 home runs as opposed to 8 when he was at home. So, you know, I mean, just about the same batting average and such. There's not a lot different in terms of that. You know, I can see it being pretty much a lateral move.
And I think the fly ball rate is something that's also got to get up. But there's definite, I mean, maybe not 20 home run potential, but to get over 15 might be a solid bet for him this year if he finds enough playing time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and if you do look a little bit more on the road last season, he definitely had a harder time hitting the ball hard. He had, you know, a 36% hard hit percentage on the road as opposed to 43% at home. The home run to fly ball rate was 17% at home as opposed to 11% on the road. Mind you, you know, we don't know all of the parts that he played at, you know, all the time. So, you know, Surely he saw Colorado and such, but, you know, it's going to be completely different going to Camden Yards. We don't have much to gain in terms of, you know, predicting, you know, whether this is going to be a massive bump in terms of power or not. I would think it's going to be a few more home runs and probably a little bit less in batting average. Regardless, I still think, yeah, he's about a top 10 catcher, and that's about where he's being valued. I'm okay with having him there.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that, you know, you can feel fairly decent about letting the high guys go and know that for the value you're getting, he's going to be there for you later in drafts.
Yeah, absolutely. This bench is kind of kind of laughable.
Disgusting.
At this point. I you know, Caleb Joseph, Christian Walker, Ryan Flaherty, and then something called Anuri Taveras. Rule 5 pick from Boston. I have literally never heard of the guy before, so I apologize for not knowing him if he's like some type of a big deal that I just haven't heard of. But any of these guys interest you in AL only?
No, pass.
Chris Tillman is once again probably going to start opening day for the Baltimore Orioles. Didn't have a bad year last year. Actually had one of his best, if not the best. What are we thinking about him going into this year?
He gets out there on the mound. He's one of only 23 guys to throw 120 starts over the past 4 years. So, I mean, if that's what you're looking for is somebody to eat innings for your team, then by all means, go ahead. But, I mean, just because you're out there eating innings, you look at some of the guys on this list, and especially how far they go into games, because he does not. And the names that are kind of comparable there are Wade Miley, Edison Volquez, and Ian Kennedy. And that's about the level of disgustingness you can expect from Chris Tillman. I think maintaining the velocity on his fastball is going to be one of the keys to watch for this year, as long as he can, you know, keep it, you know, 91 and a half or above. I think you're going to be looking, I mean, he should get paid. I don't understand why, you know, they threw a bunch of money at Ubaldo and we saw how that worked out, why you wouldn't go ahead and give a guy that's been one of the better pitchers. I was reading something about how for like strikeout rates among Baltimore pitchers, or, you know, he was behind like Mike Mussina for a lot of franchise records. And I think he's going to get paid, but you shouldn't pay him for your fantasy team.
Yeah, I mean, and he does well against AL East opponents. You know, last year he had a 3.38 ERA against Tampa Bay. He had 3.20 ERA against the Yankees, 3.6 ERA against Toronto, and then, you know, a 4.15 ERA against Boston. So, like, I mean, if the guy does well against the opponents in your division, you should just might as well, you know, lock him up for a little bit of time. He's a top 300 pick right now. And, you know, he's just kind of like a middle of the rotation guy, back end guy. There's not a lot for me to say here. He's just a mid fours ERA type. The fact that he had a 3.77 ERA, you know, I think was a bit lucky for him, even though he did, you know, exhibit that in the past. His expected ERA on Baseball HQ was 4.45, and they're very accurate in terms of their projections there. That's something that is going to take time to kind of regress to the mean, but it might be as soon as this season. So there's nothing in terms of his strikeout profile. He's more of a fly ball pitcher, doesn't have any, you know, type of ground ball tendencies. First pitch strike rate is mediocre, doesn't miss a ton of bats. There's not a lot to like here with Chris Tillman.
Well, the one thing compared to, you know, earlier in his career is the home runs seem to be a little under control. He's still looking at a, you know, 1.18 as far as a career overall, but the past, you know, 3 years have been right around one even. And that's nice, you know, given that ballpark and division.
Yeah, he's another guy that was getting injured a ton at the beginning of his career and then kind of turned it around a bit. So it's kind of, you know, weird that him and Chris Davis have been so consistent for the Orioles when, you know, they looked like they might not even make the major leagues at one point. You know, it's kind of weird.
It's probably all the Adderall up there.
Yeah, maybe Davis will, you know, retake his Adderall. I totally forgot about that. Maybe, yeah, it'll just get back on the juice. We'll see.
The speed, the juice, whatever you call it.
Whatever you want to call it. Juice is, you know, slang for performance-enhancing substances.
Whoa. Schooling everybody with the slang terminology there.
Yeah, or it's the nickname for O.J. Simpson, whichever way. Kevin Gausman, somebody that I certainly love, and I know, you know, a lot of the, you know, members of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits crew love, finally kind of had a mini breakout last year. It wasn't, like, fully there, and we always give pause to these Baltimore pitchers because we, you know, just never know. They always handle them so weird that, you know, it's borderline amazing that any of them kind of break out to be average starters, let alone, you know, above average. But Gausman kind of broke through that a bit last season, finally tallied more than 150 innings pitched in the major leagues and did fairly well, ended up with $11 in roto value. What do you think about Kevin Gausman going into this year? Is he going to be essentially a, you know, top three or four pitcher for you, which is where you're going to have to take him based on NFBC ranks at least?
I mean, he's another guy where the home, and I mean, it's Baltimore given the ballpark. Yeah, they need to keep their home runs in check. But the two splits that jump out to me when you look at Kevin Gausman are with men on base, because that's where he absolutely kills it. You look at his triple slash with men on 202, 249, 323 against when a base was occupied, but with the bases empty, 304, 359, and a 510 triple slash. 19 of his 28 home runs came with the bases empty. And the other thing was, as you look at how he turns over the lineup, so 235 batting average the first time through the lineup, fairly decent. 289 the second time through, so wow. Batters are kind of making the adjustment to him. But as he comes back around the third time, and it wasn't weighted by low numbers or anything like that, he actually, you know, did see some time the third time through the rotation, or through the lineup, excuse me, 242. So he's making the counter adjustments, and he's not just flaming out as he goes deeper into games. And tucked right inside the top 40 starting pitchers is right where I like him.
Yeah, I like him a ton. I don't like the price, though, at all. I think that we're kind of paying for not the ceiling, but close to it for this year. Going, you know, for keeper and dynasty leagues, I think that the sky's the limit, but you know, like, we saw what Michael Fulmer can do, and he's going right in front of him. You know, we saw, I mean, Marcus Stroman, who I, you know, despite me hating where he was going last season, the fact that he's going, you know, to what, 20 picks behind him now, behind Gausman, is kind of crazy. Vincent Velasquez at 183, going behind Kevin Gausman. I, these are a few guys that I would certainly take above him based on cost. Again, that's not a sight on, you know, or that's not a, you know, a bad sign for Gausman itself. I just don't, I feel like there's other options to take, you know, even though Gausman should improve even more this year.
And I mean, that's, you know, kind of pick your poison there with the young guy you want to fall in love with, because I, you know, I do like Michael Fulmer and Stroman. I agree with the inflated price last year. Velasquez, I'm not as high on as everybody else in FWFB seems to be.
You need to calm down. You need to calm down, sir. That's like all in, bro. All in.
That's, you guys are trying to get me to drink the Kool-Aid and wear the Crocs and whatnot, but we'll see how that works.
Oh my God. There's definitely going to be some bets thrown down on the, you know, Velasquez probably versus Kevin Gausman at this point. No, I'm not going to do it against Gausman, because I've loved Gausman since day one and I can't go against him, but the draft cost is a little worrisome to me. I want it to tick down a bit. That's mainly what I'm looking at here. I just feel like it's a little bit too high for him, especially pitching. I can't get over. It's like picking a guy in Coors Field. You know, it's really hard to know that you're going to be having a guy pitch against Toronto, the Yankees, Boston, all in an amazing ballpark, and then he has to go to multiple ballparks that are really good as well. You know, Yankee Stadium and Boston play well at times, and then Tampa Bay isn't as bad as people think. There's a lot of worry in terms of just where he's playing and who he's playing, despite the skills.
Yeah, and it's funny because I'm looking at this NFBC list and I'm staring at John Gray and I'm kind of wondering, kind of the same thing going on. And I think that would be an interesting debate personally.
Yeah, absolutely. And another guy that people are debating on is Dylan Bundy, and I really want to know where you fall on him because, I mean, pretty much left for dead prior to last season. They couldn't send him anywhere. He was out of options. They start him off in the bullpen. He does okay there. And then they put him in the starting rotation, and he wasn't amazing. I'm not going to sit here and, sugarcoat things and say that he was, one of the best pitchers in baseball or anything like that. But he did show a ton of flashes. A 12% swinging strike rate in the second half, almost 10 strikeout per nine. That's definitely going to play in fantasy. What do you think about Bundy for this year? And are you, he's pretty much going right where Chris Tillman's being taken at pick, 302 right now. You have to be interested, right?
Yeah, they were, I had just closed out that tab, but they were back-to-back on that NFBC, weren't they, pretty much?
Absolutely. Yeah, they were right there, like 300, 302.
Absolutely. Yeah, Dylan Bundy, once again, lots of home runs, 18 and 110 innings, take a shot. And I think the walk rate could also be an issue. And when you add those two things together and think what might have become of that 4.02 ERA last year if his left on base rate wasn't at 80%, it could be a little worrisome. But the strikeouts are definitely there. You look at the guys that threw over 100 innings last year, and he ranks inside top 50. So not elite by any stretch of the imagination as far as K percentage is concerned. But he's within 10 spots of guys like Kyle Hendricks, Julio Tehran, Johnny Cueto, who now strikes people out now that he's in San Francisco. Who would have imagined that? And so the strikeout upside definitely intrigues me. And you'd go Dylan Bundy over Chris Tillman?
I would, just based on upside. That's alone in fantasy. Yep.
And just, I see the holes in Tillman as well too. And people always like the shiny new toy. So yeah, I'd go Bundy too.
Yeah. While I love Bundy and I don't, love him because I think that he's going to all of a sudden, be an ERA asset in fantasy, but I do love the strikeout numbers. And what I particularly love is that his first pitch strike rate when, last season in a very minimal amount of time was 50%. Even this year, even this last year when he started in the bullpen, it was 45% the first month. He jumps it up to 63% in May, 73% in June, and then he falls off a bit in July, and then comes back up 62 and 64% in August and September. That's really good. Just being able to get that first strike in is just markedly better than not being able to. And then, keeping the velocity pretty solid. The home runs are going to be a problem, but the strikeout numbers are there. The swinging strike rate over the months as well were solid. 15%, 11%, 11% from July on. Those are certainly things that I like. The control is definitely a work in progress. And I would love to see him have more ground balls. The fact that he is a fly ball pitcher is not a recipe for success in Camden Yards. So the WHIP and the ERA are going to hurt a bit, but the strikeout numbers can definitely help you out. And if he can just kind of get lucky in a few cases, we might see him do exceed expectation, especially based on the draft price. I do just want to say on the side here, you and I are going to do the Tigers. Jordan Zimmermann at 322 is ridiculous. I don't know how that even happens.
Yeah, no, I love Jordan Zimmermann. Sorry, with the Nationals. The Tigers, the strikeout rate just absolutely dropped off. The walks were something we hadn't seen with him in quite a while. I know this isn't the Tigers preview and we're going to get to him later, but that's pretty criminal.
Yeah, so even above Bundy, I would definitely take a shot on Zimmermann, who's going a little bit behind him, just based on him being half as good as what he was last year. But regardless, the rest of this rotation we're done, right? Like Giovanni Gallardo, Ubaldo Jimenez, there's nothing there. You have guys like Mike Wright in the minor leagues, Logan Barrett, Tyler Wilson,
there's just nothing here, right?
Yeah, I was actually going to say Russian roulette, gun to your head. do you go Ubaldo or who was the other guy you just said?
Ubaldo. Sorry, I
dropped it. Or Gallardo.
I would just pull the trigger. Honestly, I suppose I would go Ubaldo based on the fact that he was serviceable, like for a stretch last year.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to answer that question. I just wanted you to embarrass yourself by answering.
Yeah,
it,
I'm definitely embarrassed. The fact that there's even any radio sound with me saying that Ubaldo had a stretch where he was good last year kind of upsets me. Now since I had to pull him up, he did have a 2.31 ERA in the month of September with a 0.83 WHIP. 0.83 WHIP? What?
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah, that happened. I'm actually like shocked just looking at that. Regardless, yeah, I would go Ubaldo over Giovanni Gallardo. No, but do not draft Ubaldo.
No, don't.
Go into the bullpen. This should be fairly quick here. We have Zach Britton, obviously kind of got gypped in the playoffs, especially against Toronto. Should have been it. Didn't. He's a top 60 pick. Are you willing to go with him early in drafts?
I love what he did, and I traded him in a dynasty league before the season started last year, and that bit me in the ass. But it's just a really high price, and if I'm going to pay up, I'm gonna just pay the piper for Kenley or Chapman. It's just how it's gonna be, and if I don't get it, I'm happy going Melanson or O or Kimbrel. And I know Melanson doesn't strike out a ton of guys or anything like that, but he's not going to be on any of my teams, but I do love him as a player.
Yeah, I don't mind taking closers. I don't mind taking, Chapman, Jansen, Britton. I'm not a Melanson guy. It's Sungwoo Oh or Roberto Osuna anytime early. But at least just talking about Britton and doing a team preview, he's elite. He had almost an 80% ground ball rate last year. He had a 79% ground ball rate the year prior. The expected ERA 1.75 and 2.03 the last 2 years. Doesn't get more elite than that. He's an elite option. The velocity is somehow getting better as the years have gone on. And the one thing that will go against him is, he had a 7% home run to fly ball rate last year. The 2 years prior, 20% and 17%. So you should see some negative home run regression in that aspect. But regardless, he's still going to be a guy that has a less than 2 ERA more than likely.
Absolutely.
Anybody behind him that you're interested in? I know Michael Givens, got some love last year prior to the season starting. Is there any type of love with any of these bullpen options?
I mean, after our little Koji Uehara talk the other day, it's kind of gotten me thinking about, relievers and where I'm starting to value in drafts. Givens, trouble with the walk last year, but I think that's something that could get fixed for him. And I think he's something that I would be fairly interested in a deeper, like an AL-only league or whatnot. The strikeouts are definitely there. But other than that, there's not a whole lot to look at in the bullpen.
Yeah, I like Givens still, even though he kind of, didn't shit the bed last year, but he started off kind of rough, but, still leveled things off over time, ended up with 13 holds, which is, okay in holds leagues, nothing special, but the strikeout numbers are certainly there. 15% swing strike rate last season, for the second year in a row, had more than 11 strikeouts per nine. Certainly things we love to see. Hopefully the walks kind of tick back down. Darren O'Day kind of always finds his way into a save or two every once in a while. So he's always somebody to kind of have on your speed dial in case something were to happen to Britton. I still like Brad Brock a bit as well. He was somebody that got put into high leverage situations last year for them. So I can kind of, see all three of them in some way, shape, or form kind of forming a committee if something did happen to Britton. I do just want to mention Wade Miley is still somebody that could, pitch in the rotation if something happened to one of the guys. Again, somebody that we're not really looking for. I think that's gonna about do it. Is there anybody in the minor leagues that you find interesting at all? I know Chance Cisco is like their top catching prospect. Don't think we'll see him this year. If we do, it's kind of a whatever move. I mean, Matt Wieters is the guy there more than likely. Or if they don't, or I'm sorry, Wellington Castillo is their guy. Matt Wieters, Wellington Castillo is their guy more than likely. So I you know, and they still have Caleb Joseph on the roster. I don't think that, you know, Cisco will really get meaningful time. But is there anybody here? Adam, Brett Walker, Henry Garuccia?
No, thanks. That's, and I mean, you're definitely more of the minor guy than I am, but I, like I said, I think there's a signing coming before, you know, any of these prospects are gonna, you know, do anything productive.
I agree. Hunter Harvey is one of their top guys. He, you know, just had Tommy John surgery last year, so we won't be seeing him for a bit. Yeah, there's really no big name prospects that we'll see from this team. The only guy that I find intriguing is Adam Brett Walker, because he, you know, is a really nice slugger. And, you know, the Orioles were tops in the baseball in home runs last season. I don't see them doing that again this year if the roster is constructed as is. And even if they add a guy, it's not like a home run bopper. I expect a person that they add to be okay, but not somebody that's going to be, you know, Mark Trumbo-esque. I mean, I suppose Trumbo could return, but I doubt it at this point. So regardless, I think this kind of wraps it up for the Orioles. Once again, Evan, kind of let people know where you're at and how they can reach you and such.
At EZEV3, harassing everybody at FWFB about their Vincent Velasquez love, and just having fun and trolling. That's what I'm doing this off season.
Yeah, we're continuing these, you know, team previews, especially, you know, throughout January here. Please, again, rate and review the show. It really helps us out. You know, we give a lot of time to this, and, you know, we really appreciate just some feedback and, you know, letting us get noticed by other people. That way we can kind of grow a bit. You can catch me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Hit us up with questions. You know, anything. This is interactive as well. So if you have any questions about any teams upcoming that we haven't covered, you know, shout out, you know, give us a question or two. We'll try and answer them on the show. But I'm also available on fantasypros.com. You can check out my Rays updates there. Once again, I contribute to baseballhq.com as well. So multiple places that you can find my stuff. Please visit friendswithfantasybenefits.com and check out all of the content. We also offer fantasy football and fantasy basketball, you know, stuff as well. So check it all out. For Evan and myself, thanks for listening, and have a fantastic offseason.